It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday. What's up, Bills Mafia? And I regret to inform everyone, I'm excited for the hockey game tonight. It's a personal decision on my own part. I'm excited for the hockey game tonight. Sal joins us on the Western Hotline. Sabres and Penguins. Turnaround starts now. Sal, the vibes are off the charts. The Sabres snapped their losing streak. They beat Florida. The Bills snapped their losing streak. They traded for a wide receiver. Like, we're just all good from here on. That's my prediction. Nothing bad.
Yeah, Yankees won last night.
All right, I'll allow that. I had a Mets. The Mets had a win. I'm happy for them. Nothing bad anymore. Hey, good morning, Sal. How are you?
I'm great. Did you see elite, like, social media-ing by the Bills after the game on Monday night?
Was it the great night for New York sports?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It was really good.
Yeah. Did you appreciate...
That's great. And then the other one yesterday... Sorry, Joe, real quick. Okay. The other one yesterday was how, like, the chemistry is already there between Allen and Cooper. And as has, like, the Bills' own account tweeted, like, Allen rolling out and throwing one away, but Cooper catching it on the sidelines against the Browns. It was great.
I appreciated that one, too. It's great.
Did you appreciate on Monday night, Sal, that the Jets, which I thought it was always Jets-Mets, but there's a lot of crossover, I'm sure, that during the TV timeouts, they would put the Yankee game on the Jumbotrons. Like, not even just like, hey, here's the score. Like, they had the live game, like, on the screens.
I did, and I don't know, Joe, when you walked into the stadium, they were doing that for the Mets as well until that game ended.
Okay,
so I know you probably came in like so during pregame warmups. I'm sure you probably weren't there for the whole 2 hours the gates opened.
Right.
Maybe you were, but they had that happening for the Mets game, and then the Mets ended. They would do that then for the Yankees game. Like, they kept putting it on. Actually, until the game started, they had a lot more of it because, you know, there's no game to show and it's not TV timeouts. They did that. And at one point, actually, it was kind of interesting. There was the Yankees were up 2-0, and they had a runner on third. It's a TV timeout. And the Guardians throw it, and you could see the wild pitch just start to happen, and everybody in the stands like, ah, and then they cut right back to the game, and like crowd goes, oh, because they couldn't see it on the video board anymore.
Yep.
Well, Sal, the big news of the day, I mentioned earlier, we were going to give you the morning off, and you're like, as I'm walking out yesterday, said, whatever, we'll see if something happens. And then soon after... You know, pretty big something happened. The Bills go out and trade for Amari Cooper, which, you know, this had been a name Bills fans that are paying attention had been looking into as someone that was someone you could acquire. Not the same as Davante Adams for the money. So that always made sense. Like, if the Bills want to get this done, they can offer up a package and they can get it done. And ultimately they do. It's less than a third round pick. That's the way I want to say it. They gave up a third, and they also move up from the 7th to the 6th in two different drafts, whatever. How do you like the price, and what does it mean for what the Bills are looking to get out of Amari Cooper?
Well, I think the price has got to be, you know, looked at as something that obviously is affordable for the Bills when you have 2 second rounders and a situation where, you know, they're trying to strike now.
Three-fourths, right? I mean, there's
What's that?
They're going to have three-fourths, too.
That's right. So just look at the big, you know, picture overall here. And this is something we've talked about, and I mentioned a lot here the last few weeks, which is the Bills didn't go into this year saying, okay, you know, we're going to take a step back and reset. I think a lot of people anticipated that. Well, we did hear Brandon Breen said it's transition year. I think it was a year where they wanted to, they felt good about how well they'd compete. They have Josh Allen. Let's see where things go. Suddenly, guys, after 6 weeks, you're looking around going, this is our division. Like, we have a chance to take this thing, and we can wrap this up and really put our foot down on this. Now you look around the conference and say, okay, yeah, we've lost a couple games here, but we still have the same record as Baltimore, and, you know, Houston's got to do their thing, and Kansas City has a bunch of injuries. We still play Kansas City. Like, they have a serious look at, you know, a higher seed in the AFC playoffs here. And now you say, all right, regardless of what you thought about, like, how this year was going to go or what you wanted to see out of it, you have a serious chance here to make the same kind of run that you've made over the last few years. So you evaluate your team and say, let's strike, let's do it. And you make this move because of that. You become a buyer, not a seller. Not that they would have been necessarily, but they also could have just played it out and said, yeah, we knew this would be a transition year. But now you give up some of that draft capital because you have a chance here to really compete in the AFC once again, like you have the last few years. So that's one part of it. Then you look at the compensation and say, A, They already have extra draft capital last year. They have those 2 second rounders. They have extra fourth rounders. So that from that standpoint, you can afford to do it. And, you know, it's not something that really, you know, takes away from what you're trying to accomplish. And then B, you don't have to pay him anything really other than less than $1 million. He's, you know, $800,000 in the salary cap, which gets me to the final point, which is I think the timing is super interesting after the Davante Adams trade. Now, we may hear from Brandon Bean today. We may not. At some point, we're going to talk to him, right? And I'm sure that one of the first questions will be about the timing of this trade and how it coincided, possibly did it matter, Davante Adams. Now, I don't expect Brandon Bean to say, well, we really wanted Davante Adams over Amari Cooper. I'm not expecting that at all. But I do think that market had to matter here with Davante Adams. And the fact that Adams gets traded and then we find out, okay, he really wanted to play with the Jets. The Jets are eating all this money. All of a sudden, the Bills trade for Cooper. Was it a case where, hey, we'll monitor Adams, and if we can get this down to where we can make it work salary-wise, maybe that's something we'll do. If not, we're going to pivot, and we're going to go to Amari Cooper, which was always kind of a thing that we all talked about anyway that they could wind up doing for the financials. So to me, the timing was super interesting how all this went down as well.
Yeah, tons of reporting throughout that the Bills were not out on Adams, and you know, right. we wondered if they'd be willing to pay whatever price it was. And yeah, I'm with you, Sal. Like, I don't know how Bean addresses that and has an answer for that, but the immediacy right after, like, okay, you pick up the phone, say, let's do the deal. They might have had it already in place. Like, we want to see what happens with Adams, and if that doesn't go down, we'll call you right away. Like, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case, and, you know, I don't think these things happen, you know, necessarily. They can come together very, very quickly, right? But generally, it takes a little while. You make a phone call here, a phone call there. Remember the Rasul Douglas trade last year, if I remember correctly. They made the trade during the trade deadline, but they said they checked in on him before that, a couple weeks before
and
that. And there, said, were, hey, you know,
and there were reports they were after Jonathan Jones or Jalen Johnson. Thank you,
right.
Jalen Johnson. So, like, yeah, maybe when we start to hear that they're in on a player, like, all right, let's look around the position because they're not going to just, you know, they're not going to lock themselves into one idea.
For that, you kind of need circumstances to fall your way too, right? Because they could have, who knows, like Sal, when they would have checked in for the first time on Cooper. It could have been as far back as when, I don't know, they restructured the deal or the offseason. But you might need, or it would help, I'm sure, when Cleveland's season starts falling apart. That's how you can eventually get to making a trade like this.
Yeah, and what happens if Cleveland wins this past week over Philly? Are they in a situation where they still want to make a deal? They might feel that they're just not quite there yet. And now, the other part of it is, the timing-wise, we're still a few weeks before the trade deadline. This is not a deal you make right at the trade deadline, where it's a little bit later in the year. You have a few extra weeks here than you normally would in a situation like this to get him in, get him acclimated, get him up to speed. I do find it interesting, though, that the Bills have already moved on from a wide receiver, leaving themselves with only five. Now, of course, they could always elevate Tyrell Shavers or KJ Hamler or someone like that. So, you know, it's not like you have to have him on the field, but the indication is, you know, you already move on from MVS, which is the move they made yesterday. You know, he comes in here, you're going to try and get him up to speed as quick as possible to get him on the field. And guys, I mean, Monday night didn't alleviate a ton of concerns at the wide receiver spot for me. It was better than it was on the previous 2 weeks against Houston and Baltimore, but there were still a lot of the same issues that we've talked about. Throughout most of the game, the Bills were not targeting wide receivers. At the end of the day, they targeted all of their wide receivers a total of 12 times. 9 catches for 12 yards, or for 12 targets, is a nice ratio, but that's not enough. They have to have more out of that group. They have to have more production out of that group. Their highest, most targeted wide receiver only had 4. Their most catches they had was only 3. So this is a move, I think, when you take everything into account, going back all offseason, and Jeremy's train, and everything else that we talked about, I think you finally arrive at, okay, we just have to help this group more than maybe they thought they would. Who knows what the thought was going into the year? I know, you know, Mike and Chris bring this up a lot, and Mike always wonders, did the Bills always think that this could happen, or were they super confident and wouldn't happen and they had to pivot? Right? I think that's something we're wondering as well. And again, I don't expect Brandon Bean to necessarily tell us that publicly, but, you know, it could always be very fluid on how these things work out. And look at Curtis Samuel, his lack of production so far, right? I don't think that that was necessarily something they expected at this point. But this is a move that this group, this team, this roster needed to make. And I'll say this. You have to work really, really hard, I think, guys, to not like it for the Bills, right?
Yep.
Like, if someone's out, if some fan is out there today bashing this trade, then to me, you already come in with an agenda. I mean, I really don't understand, like, what you could. I'm not telling you it's the greatest trade in the world. I'm not telling you they're winning the Super Bowl because of the trade. That's not what I'm saying. But I don't know how you can get to this is a bad trade for the Bills. The financials are perfect for the Bills. The compensation is not extraordinary. And he's a really good player who's had 7 1,000-yard seasons in this league who just turned 30 years old.
803-0550. We'll get more on this Cooper trade. Let some of you callers that are on hold kind of direct us, and we'll talk all around it, the fallout, what it means, how it affects the offense. Mo in New Jersey is going to join the conversation. Hey, Mo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Josh. How you doing?
Doing great.
Good, thanks.
The only thing I can think of that anybody would say that this is not a good trade is like, okay, he's the same exact age as Diggs. If you were saying Diggs is on the wrong side of 30, still say the same thing about Amari Cooper. I think they've both been in the league for about 10 years, but this guy comes without the package. He's been traded 4 times. Not one of those times did he complain, say, I want out, even if his situation at the time was terrible, right? Diggs is the complete opposite. He comes with the baggage now. If you say, let's compare apples to apples, I do think Diggs has a little bit better of a skill set. But this guy, Amari Cooper, is exactly what we need. I think he's going to fit in well with the group of guys that we have. He's going to come in, he's going to do his work, and not complain. And, you know, if it works out really well, maybe we can extend him. That would probably be the best-case scenario. But I also think if he comes in, he's going to allow everybody else to go to their more natural positions. He's going to take the attention of maybe, you know, like a 2X or a number one would come in, he would garner the attention on the outside. It'll open up things for the other guys, right? Samuel could go to a more natural position, things that he's more used to. Maybe he'd come out of the backfield a little bit. You could do some gadget things with him. Bowman no longer has to worry about taking the one, you know, the top corner from the other team or whoever. You know what I mean? But the attention's not going to be on Coleman anymore. Amari Cooper's going to, and he gets open with his routes. That's the one thing I feel like we haven't had this season is a true one that can get open with his routes. It's not going to be Josh scrambling for his life, making the plays happen. Cooper can get open and Josh can throw it to him or somebody else because he's going to run his routes correctly. He's going to be where he's supposed to be and get the, you know, separation needed to get open. So I love this move. I love this trade. I've been saying it for weeks, and I'm so happy that they got it done yesterday.
Thanks, Mo. You know, on the slotting other guys in, one spot I'm going to wonder about, Sal. So this could probably be good for Keon Coleman in terms of development, having a leader in the room that is – and whatever, done a lot in the league. Like, if you're looking for Keon Coleman to get that guidance from somebody, there's not really anybody, I don't think, in that room. Not to say Curtis Samuel can't help him, but this is a different caliber of player. So there's the benefit that Coleman might get from being in the room with an Amari Cooper. And there's also the flexibility. They've been playing Coleman almost exclusively on the outside, and there are lots of people that think he could flourish in the slot. I wonder if Cooper doesn't kind of free Coleman up a little bit to move around the formation.
Yeah, I still wonder if it's... I don't doubt that Keon Coleman could play well in the slot. I just wonder if that's a little too much to put on him right now as a rookie. And I think that could be part of it too, right? Where, okay, we start doing that, you know, you start... He, instead of focusing on some things he could really hone in on and be really good at, are you spreading him too thin? Because now it's a different release. There's different angles you have to take. You know, there's obviously different play calls, but there's a lot of things that have to go into that. And I just don't know if maybe he's ready for that. But here we are, 6 weeks into his rookie year, and if they feel that maybe they can start doing some of that with him, certainly, you know, that would be an option here for that to happen. I agree that, you know, it allows people to play a little bit differently in different spots in the field. But what it really does for me is forces the defense to kind of concentrate a little bit more on that X receiver, on Amari Cooper, on someone that's going to get a little bit more attention. Not that you're necessarily going to put your best corner on him all the time. You're going to double him all the time. But at least, hey, there's a 3rd down and 6. Like, you might need to be aware where Amari Cooper is, right? He's that guy that can make a big play on you here at this moment. And I think that's what Joe Brady kind of has always wanted to get out of this offense, which is, you know, I can go to anywhere I want. But if you have that one guy that they have to think about a little bit more, you know, that might help them. The everybody eats mentality is great in concept, and it was working for a while. But as I've said since the beginning of this, one of the issues is when it comes time to a big 3rd down, like, who's your go-to guy, and do you have that person on your roster? Maybe this is the guy that they're looking for that.
One very interesting thing about this, Joe's pointed out Amari Cooper's average depth of target. Like, in this offense, in this mm-hmm. Brady offense, it's a lot of more quick throws, shorter throws, yards after catch. And that's not exactly what Cooper has been in his career. He's been a down-the-field guy. One of the stats we have is in Cleveland, the air yards to Cooper this year, it's about 700. And the entire Bills receiver core is 800. So this is more of a down-the-field guy. I wonder if this Bills offense doesn't think they need to stretch the field, not necessarily over top of safeties, but just threaten a little bit more in the intermediate and long passing game.
Yeah, I agree with you. I wonder if that's the case as well. I'm looking at right now his average length of reception. So if you take just his receptions on the season, he's averaging, he's top 25 in the league. He's 23rd in the NFL at 10.25. Average length of reception. Yards per catch is way down, but again, that's a lot of it is, you know, circumstance and Deshaun Watson. There's been a lot written about, you know, the struggles there. Now he's had some drops in his career, right? I mean, we know that. Yeah, I think this year he's had some drops. So those are things that you're gonna have to look at, and maybe you live with something like that that happens, you know, down the road. It hasn't been the most consistent when it comes to catching the ball. The catch percentage for his career is, you know, low 60s%. But this can be a very big play guy. Such a big play guy that, I mean, last night I was looking at some numbers. Amari Cooper has 4 200-yard receiving games in his career. I don't know if you guys, I tweeted this out. Do you know what the NFL record is?
Ooh, it can't be much higher. Is it like 6 or 7?
5.
Okay.
Calvin Johnson and Lance Allworth have 5 200-yard receiving games. Amari Cooper has 4, tied with Jerry Rice and Don Hudson and Charlie Hennigan. I mean, like, those are the names that he's with, and that's how big of a player he can be. He's less than 300 yards away from 10,000 in his career, so he's going to get that in a Bills uniform most likely. You know, that'll be something, a milestone to watch for over the next, you know, several weeks here. He's had 7 1,000-yard seasons. He's been a big play guy in his career. He's put up big numbers. In fact, I think that, like, a few weeks ago, this is before the trade, Chopin Bulldog and I were all talking about how he actually has put up like a lot of numbers that have gone under the radar for a guy in this, you know, generation of football, because all these other receivers put up these great numbers. Here's Amari Cooper kind of flying under the radar with some of the best numbers. He's top 10, basically, of all active players. And yeah, he's been in the league a little while. He's only 30 years old. It's not like he's 35, 36 years old. And he's top 10 in pretty much every statistical category with all active wide receivers. Part of the issue, though, has been he's on the Raiders, who were not good. He's on the Cowboys, had some decent years, obviously, but they haven't been great. And then he's been on the Cleveland Browns. You go back to the Cowboys, by the way. One of the connections here, the Bills wide receivers coach, Adam Henry, was Cooper's wide receivers coach in Dallas for 2 years, 2020 and 2021. And he had great years there, but, you know, he's had really good years, I should say. He had 92 catches 1 year there. Not saying that, you know, he was the reason why, because those are actually in line with a lot of things he's already done. But the familiarity certainly matters. That's not a move you make. This is not a move you make, probably, I would guess, without Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott saying to Adam Henry, hey, is this guy a problem? Tell us a little bit about him. Yeah. And I asked Sean McDermott about that yesterday. McDermott said he had a good conversation with Henry, and he gave, you know, good reviews and, you know, a lot of really nice things to say about Amari Cooper. And I think those things matter as well.
To Cleveland next. David is in Cleveland. Hey, David, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. So yesterday you and I spoke briefly about trying to figure out what the Bills' identity was and what Bean was deciding to do about their strategy on offense and not being able to defend the run, and their style of offense didn't meld well with what they were doing defensively. And I think Brandon Bean yesterday afternoon answered that question. I think he realized that, you know, things in the receiver room were where they needed to be, which is great. I think Amari Cooper is a great addition. I think we have to be concerned about the drops, but to a lesser degree, if you look at who's been throwing him the ball, sitting here in Cleveland watching the Browns play on TV, I mean, the ball placement for Deshaun Watson is horrendous. You know, they end up talking about drops, but some of that has to do with where the ball is being placed. If you look at where Amari Cooper's played in the past and had success, he's had quarterbacks with relatively good accuracy. And I think Josh Allen, with his arm talent, I think is going to bring out the best in Amari Cooper. And I think I'm hopeful that this is going to open things up like people have been talking about underneath for Shakir. And then the second piece I wanted to get your take on is I've seen chatter on the internet about perhaps the Bills dealing Von Miller in the next couple of weeks before the deadline, because, you know, now Brandon Breed's looking at his roster going, where are my weaknesses? Receiver room addressed. Now, run defense. So can I deal Von Miller and get some assets perhaps in a trade to shore up the run defense? I wanted to get your take on that.
Thanks, David. I've not seen anything like that, Sal. I mean, he's suspended for a couple of weeks. And they kept. This is what I would say to you, David. Sal, get your thought. They've stood with him through this, and he's produced for them this year. I'd be stunned if they decided to get away from it.
Yeah, I'm looking right now. He does have a very low base salary. Like another team could take that on, but I don't know why. Like, are other teams even looking to do that? Like, who's trading for him? And you know, I don't know at his age or whatever. And I will say this: the Bills, yeah, he's done well when he's been on the field. And the Bills also, I know they had a couple sacks last week. The Bills also need a little bit more of a pass rush. Von Miller actually helps this team. It's not a guy that's going to hurt this. He's not a guy that you're looking to deal because you're, you know, he's not helping them. So I don't know. I haven't seen that other than people just asking, like, could they do it? But I have not seen anything that leads me to any reason why that would be happening at all with Von Miller.
So Capaccio on the Western Hotline as we get reaction to the Amari Cooper trade. Anything else happened yesterday, Zell? Is Ray Davis the new number one? I mean, everybody's really excited about Ray Davis and what he brings to the table.
You mean, is he the new number one Bills running back?
I'm kidding. I wonder if he...
I've seen people say that as well I mean, I'm just here to tell everybody. Let me just remind everybody. It's okay to have multiple good players at a position. It's okay.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to just move on from someone who's good because someone else becomes good as well. You can actually have multiple guys who are good at a position, right? It's so funny. Oh, my God, this is the guy. Trade James Cook. No. James Cook is still really good, and he's a dynamic running back who does a lot for this offense. I actually think in this game against the Jets, when it was kind of, you know, okay, James Cook might not play, you know, obviously you don't know what Ray Davis is going to do or Ty Johnson, but to me, all week it was, okay, but against this team, that might not be the worst thing to feed the ball to a couple of physical running backs. You're going to go straight forward. And that's what they did.
Yeah. The physical running back role is another one they've been chasing for a couple of years. Maybe they finally have landed on one.
Oh, I mean, he looked really good, right? And he takes that. Him and Ty Johnson both, you know, they take that personal. Like, they love running like that. That's their style. That's what they want. Ray Davis especially. I think it's a really good compliment. I remember the very first week, right before there was a pregame interview on the radio broadcast. Either Eric or Chris, my apologies, interviewed Brandon Bean, and that was the pregame radio interview. And asked, I think it was Chris, whoever it was, Eric said, "What has surprised you? Anything about this team?" And Brandon said, "I'm not surprised." He said, but Brandon Bean said, "I think we might have the best running back room since I've been here." And that was really interesting to me. He said that in week one. Like, they've been really confident in this group, you know, ever since they drafted Ray Davis and what they've done here. They really like their running back room, and they should. Maybe if you want to do a Barnes injury report, I'll tell you yesterday, Sean McDermott said, really good news, no significant, you know, injury news coming out of the game, some minor bumps and bruises that you might see, you know, throughout the week at practice. But that's really good news. And I told you guys the other day, the blue tent was never up during the game. I never got any sort of injury news on anybody during the game, which is great news. And he said that, you know, they're hopeful, you know, to get both Ed Oliver and James Cook back, you know, soon here. So maybe this week. This could be, let's see how it goes, right? But just from the indication there, this could wind up being like the healthiest this team has been in a while this week against the Titans. We'll see.
And now we wait to see how long it takes Cooper to kind of spin up and be ready to go for these Bills. Thanks, Sal.
You got it, guys.
The Barnes Injury Report there, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Car crash, for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. More your calls as we roll through the morning here. Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast, his take on this trade, what Amari Cooper brings specifically to this passing offense. Learned this morning on listening to Locked On Bills that Cooper's been a favorite of Joe's for quite some time. So gets a player that he likes, the Bills do. We'll talk about that with Joe Marino on the other side and take more of your calls as well. 803-0550 on WGR.
His ability to create separation, you know, he does such a great job at that. He's such a student of the game. He's a smart guy. You know, he played with Teddy Bridgewater in high school. So I've been from South Florida. I've obviously followed Amari for a while. And Coach and Teddy used to always talk about him, just the type of how cerebral he is and how he understands leverages and out of attack and in really good and strong hands. And so he has a unique skill set, something that with some traits of guys that we have on our team, some that we don't, you know, and it'll be excited to be able to work with him and figure out, you know, how it's all going to kind of work in our offense.
Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady has a new piece to mix in with his offensive attack. Amari Cooper acquired from the Bills. We've learned, we did a little digging on whether or not Cooper could factor into the compensatory pick formula, and it does not look like it because of void years.
I think it's because of void years.
Void years on a contract mean you are not part of the compensatory pick formula. So if you were to leave and sign somewhere else, the Bills do not get a compensatory pick, as I understand it. On the Western Hotline, Joe Marino, the Lockdown Bills podcast. Joe, I learned this morning that you've been a big Amari Cooper fan for many years. So the Bills acquiring him is good on both fronts.
Yeah, I've been a big Amari Cooper fan, and I think most people know that I do the Locked On Bills podcast, but I also have another daily podcast, Locked On NFL Scouting, where I cover the entire league along with Kyle Kraft, so I know he's been on the station before. And we actually have a running joke that this is a pro-Amari Cooper podcast. We've always been big fans of him. We just kind of feel like he's been an underrated player in the NFL that just is a natural wide receiver that can run routes and good hands and ball skills and concentration and can kind of, in moments, make a play. And I feel like he's been underrated. It's kind of crazy that this is not like the fourth time he's been traded. And he's been a really good player. He's got 1,100 yards for the last five seasons. So it's pretty cool for him to now be a Buffalo Bill.
So let's talk about the fit. I mean, going out and getting a wide receiver, we spent a lot of time in the offseason talking about drafts and what they could do. This is a fit that, whatever. Say what you will about the player. He might not be perfect. He's a big, big upgrade and represents what they needed so desperately.
Yeah, I think that's how you have to look at it. It's, okay, the difference between Amari Cooper and Mac Hollins or Marquez Valdes-Scantling or Keon Coleman, it's pretty significant. And I feel like that absolutely elevates this passing offense. And you think about your options with 11 personnel and however you want to deploy him. He's a guy that's played 80% of his snaps out wide so far in the NFL, and there's proof of concept with him. And I think it's really helpful that he's a guy that's been traded before. He's had production with so many different quarterbacks, whether it's Joe Flacco or Jacoby Brissett or Dak Prescott or Derek Carr. Like, he's been able to be productive in a lot of different environments with a lot of different quarterbacks. And so I know the big challenge is getting him in the building and getting up to speed and developing chemistry with Josh Allen, as Josh Allen's still working on chemistry with other weapons. So there's a lot to, it's a heavy lift here, but yeah, elevating and upgrading from what was in place is pretty significant.
How do you think the chemistry will work? Like, the type of receiver Cooper is for the type of thrower quarterback that Allen is, because I've been joking for the last 2 days that Allen, to his core, is going to look for who's farthest down the field. That's what he does. Like, the throw to Ray Davis is like, that guy's there, I'll take it. And Cooper is a guy that has been a depth of target down the field guy. And this offense, I mean, you've got your shot plays occasionally, but it tends to be more of a shorter passing game offense. So how does it all mix together? And how do you feel like Allen and Cooper's games match?
Yeah, I don't think Amari Cooper is going to come in and be a big-time field stretcher for the Bills. And I think that's, maybe earlier in his career that was more of what he did, but I don't know that he's still the low 4.4 guy that he was in 2015. I still think he's a good route technician. And so, to your point, the Bills are kind of choosy with their shot plays, which doesn't necessarily line up with the frequency that Josh Allen throws the ball down the field. And so I think where Cooper's really going to be an asset is in the intermediate areas, where you just need a guy to go get a bucket, to run a route, to uncover, to be a route technician and separate. And I feel like in a lot of ways I'm very carefully bringing up this name. I don't want to go crazy here, but I think in a lot of ways that you saw Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen be productive mirrors a lot of what I'm expecting from Cooper. And I think Diggs wasn't necessarily a big-time vertical field stretcher for the Bills, but uncovering in that intermediate range, I feel like Cooper is that. And I think Cooper is one of the better route runners throughout the last, 5, 6, 7, 8 years in the NFL. And so, again, not the explosive, quick twitch guy that maybe he was early on, but still a route technician that understands how to get open and present an available target, which, let's be honest, is exactly what Josh Allen needs and kind of lacks right now.
How much of his down year, Joe, do you put on just his situation in Cleveland versus him being a little diminished from what he was?
Yeah, that Cleveland Browns offense is an absolute joke. I mean, Deshaun Watson's not a playable quarterback. The Browns are just in a really bad spot with that contract, the commitment they have based on the trade. And honestly, I think they're in trouble. I don't know how you look at the other 52 guys in that locker room and honestly tell them that Deshaun Watson gives you the best chance to win a football game. They've invested in quarterback depth. I don't know why they're not using it. I'm guessing there's a lot of ownership influence in that decision, but Watson can't play. I mean, if anyone's watched him this year, it's a joke. I mean, historically bad in terms of being able to get first downs, and every drop back looks the same, where he takes the ball and can't find anybody and runs around and usually either gets sacked or throws it away or it's incomplete. It's embarrassing. And so to come up with any takeaways this year for Amari Cooper in that offense, I don't think he can do it.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. Let's talk a little about Ray Davis as well, who we saw on Monday night look really, really strong in this Bills offense. What kind of match do you think that is for the style of run game the Bills have? And is this a player you would want to see get a consistent role in this offense going forward?
Absolutely. I think the physicality that Ray Davis brought to the table was significant. The yards after contact was significant. And I think he can be a very nice complement to James Cook. And James Cook, 5'11", 190 pounds, that's a slender build from a running back. He's a good player. He's a slashing style guy. He's got good agility. He's a good back, but he doesn't bring a physical presence. And I think you can get that physicality out of a Ray Davis who's, you know, a tick under 5'9", and 215 pounds, and naturally has a low center of gravity and runs with low pads, and he speaks with his pads. And I think you got a great opportunity for a 1-2 punch here with those two guys, and I would get them both going. I think that the Bills offense will be at its best when they're both going, and I think, you know, even James Cook, for the amount of volume that he had last year, I thought he was least effective when the Bills needed him most late in the season, those last couple of regular season games, the playoff games. And so I think you do yourself a major service by involving Ray Davis, and I think that allows you to maximize the backfield tandem and recognizing that they have complementary skill sets, and you that physical element matters, and Ray Davis certainly provided it, and I think anybody that watched a game could feel that on Monday night.
We might feel like the offense looks like a complete version of what it can be this year right now. Defensively, Joe, they're getting big plays, but there are some red flags about the number of chunk plays that they are giving up. And it can't make Sean McDermott happy how often they are giving up big chunk plays. Do you see anything in the way that they're playing that is leading to the number of explosive plays against?
Yeah, you know what? It's a lot of short passes that are turning into long gains. You know, it's some of it is throws down the field, but I think a lot of it is just getting dinked and dunked and getting gashed through that. I'll give you some numbers here. 55.8% of all passing yards against the Bills this year come after the catch, sixth most in the NFL, despite the eighth lowest average depth of target. The Bills' defense is 25th in EPA on throws under 10 air yards, and the average separation, according to Next Gen Stats, on throws under 10 air yards is 4.5 yards of separation, which is the most in the NFL. They're just not playing very tight coverage on these short throws, and then they're getting creased after the catch. And so I feel like when you consider when the Bills' defense has been at its worst this year, early against Arizona, early against Miami, at times against the Jets, it's whenever quarterbacks are getting the ball out of their hands quickly and then guys are able to create. Or you think about the screen game. The Bills continue to get gashed on screens. And so teams are making it a space game. You know, the Bills have always been very oriented in taking away explosives down the field. And I think teams are saying, okay, yeah, we get that. We're gonna make you play in space and come off blocks and take good angles and tackle. And the Bills have been very inconsistent with that. And I think a lot of that is just guys missing time. You know, Bernard missed several weeks. Darren Johnson missed several weeks. Rapp missed a week. And I think I think those players all played well against the Jets. Don't get me wrong. But I think whenever you're out of game rhythm and you're all of a sudden now having to get yourself back in position to take properly calculated pursuit angles and playoff contact and position yourself to tackle in space, I think, you know, sometimes you can get out of rhythm with that. And so I think some of the inconsistency with the personnel availability in the back seven has contributed to that. But I think a lot of these plays are coming catch and run, and the Bills got to shore up their ability to play in space and tackle and get off contact.
Going back to Monday night for a moment, Joe, the end of the half, what was the thing that stuck out to you the most about how they played or what happened on the final series of the Jets and the Hail Mary?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the series because I think everyone's talking about the Hail Mary. I want to talk about the play before as well, where they also rush two and drop nine. On that play, Greg Rousseau and AJ Epenesa are your safeties? Are you kidding me? What purpose do they serve 20 yards off the ball? It's unfathomable to me. It's my total exception with everything is that you rush two. I know everyone wants to talk about knock down the ball. I get it. That's important too. But how does a Hail Mary work? Two elements have to happen. Number one, you have to have time for the receivers to get to the end zone. Number two is your quarterback needs space to throw the ball. When you rush two, you give them those two things on a platter. You give it to them right on a platter. And then there's just variance. Okay, maybe they catch it. Maybe there's a pass interference and they get a free down at the one. You got to take yourself in a position where they can't even get to throw off. I'd rather rush five than rush two in a Hail Mary situation. So the Bills got to ask themselves some hard questions about how they choose to align defensively in these end-of-half sequences, because they're making it way too easy on these offenses.
Yeah, the play before, there are 14 seconds left, and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, 13 seconds is a famous giving up a field goal, and with 14 seconds, they give up a touchdown. So, like, the play before is the one that gets them into Hail Mary range, and yeah, to have played that one that way is equally as horrible.
Yeah, you know, I sent a text message to Bruce Nolan during right after that play. I said, you can't rush two and drop nine and give up that 14-yard completion to Garrett Wilson. And then they did it again. And what's funny, Bruce responded to me with, you know, some laughing emojis. And I was like, I wasn't even talking about the Hail Mary.
Yeah.
I was talking about the 14-yarder to Garrett Wilson. It's I can't understand it. And they talk about protecting the sidelines. I don't know. It doesn't matter. You never rush to. You can't rush to and expect to be successful on defense.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast and Locked On NFL Scouting podcast. Joe, thanks as always. We'll chat next week after Tennessee.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Joe Marino, you can subscribe to the Locked On Bills podcast and Locked On NFL Scouting podcast, where you get your podcast, right through the Odyssey app or anywhere else.
How many people just realize they play Tennessee this week?
Yeah. Titans.
The Titans.
I mean, the Titans defense is good.
The Titans defense is very good, and their quarterback is going to watch Josh Allen, and he is going to do some wild things.
Yes, he's going to try to Mortal Kombat somebody's spine out of their body. He's going to do some weird stuff, Will Levis. The Titans defense gives up the fewest yards per game in the NFL. Might be who they played. Again, we're still kind of early. We'll get a break in more of your phone calls. Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff coming up next hour as well, and Howard picks the Bills. All coming up here on WGR.
Vucevic fires in, looking for a goalie goal. Gustafson scores! Philip Gustafson mobbed! We've got the goalie goal!
A goalie goal last night in the NHL.
You know, these fantasy hockey sites need to get it together, because I have Philip Gustafson in my fantasy hockey league, and I didn't get credit for the goal.
It should be worth 1,000 points.
I didn't get any points.
1,000.
Like
10,000.
They don't have it in their system that a goalie could score, even though it's happened before.
There were two goalie goals last year.
Allmark scored,
didn't he?
I don't know who the other one was.
There have been four since 2020, and there was a gap from 2013 to 2020 with no goalie goals. Four since 2020.
We need a Sabre goalie goal, like a real Sabre goalie goal.
All right.
Because you know the one they have, right? There's one.
No, I don't know it.
Mika Nornan.
How'd he do it?
He made a blocker save, and then the other team put it in their own net.
Hey.
So it hardly counts. I mean, it does count. It's hardly the same.
Get a quick call from Dan in Ohio. We got a break. Oh, Dan, I tried to do it, Dan. I tried. Josh said no. 803-0550, our phone number.
You want some 20-second trivia real quick?
No, we don't have time. With Josh said we got to go.
All right.
We got Lindy Ruff coming up. We got Howard picks the Bills. Amari Cooper, number 19 in your program, number one in your hearts, newest Buffalo Bill.